Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us for April's Orthopaedics Club webinar. I'm very pleased to introduce you to our speaker for today, European and RCVS specialist in small animal surgery, Benito De La Porta. Thank you, Benito. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for inviting me to this orthopedic club. So as Emer has said, today we're going to be looking, well, the next hour, we're going to be looking at how to perform elbow arthroscopy. A bit the plan is going to be is looking at how to introduce the scope into the joint, how we use the scope in the joint to be able to assess the different areas in the joint, and then a bit what are the indications for elbow arthroscopy and in what diseases we use it more and what do we do with it. So, I mean, the first thing to start, probably the major indication why we do elbow arthroscopy is pretty much to assess and treat elbow dysplasia, especially the fragmented coronoid process, or we could call nowadays a bit more the medial compartment disease or the medial coronoid disease process, which makes everything a bit complicated. But basically, the main indication for elbow arthroscopy is for management of fragmented or coronoid disease. We can also use it for an unilateral and corneal process, for the treatment of OCD. It can help us also a bit to look at incomplete ossification of the humeral condyle. And then other options that we can have is to assist fracture repair to be sure that the fragments are well reduced, that there's no implants in the joint. We can use elbow arthroscopy to assess osteoarthritis or progression of disease in the elbow. And also we can use it to get synovial biopsies if we're thinking of some kind of tumor in the joint, or for samples for culture. And as well, we can use it for the management of septic arthritis, not only to get a sample for culture and cytology, but also, of course, to give the elbow a good flush if we're thinking that there is infection in that joint. The basic equipment that we're going to need is going to be an arthroscope. Ideally, the size that we're gonna use is basically, or the recommended size is a 1.9 diameter. You can also use the 2.7 diameter scope, and that's the one really that I do tend to use more, especially in normal sized dogs like Labradors, for example. Bigger sized dogs will use a 2.7, sometimes a 1.9. In smaller dogs, you would use a 1.9. The only thing to be aware by using the 2.7 that you can cause more iatrogenic damage, especially when you're going into the joint. And what it is very important to get a good view of the structures is that, of course, they have to be at 30 degree for oblique so we can see all the structures. The basic instruments that we're going to need, basically we're going to need at least one cannula and trocar for the scope. We're going to need some good grasping forceps. We could use curette. We're going to need some kind of burr. It could be a manual burr, or we could have a power burr to be able to burr in bone away of the or in the joint. And quite important, the right angle probe, so we can be able to probe the structures inside the joint. So here we're going to have two scopes. Normally we have the 1.9 and the 2.7 in the same box, so we can choose depending on the size of the patient. We're going to have the head of the camera, and then we're going to have the light cable for the light. As we said, instrument wise, before I had several sizes of graspers. The problem is that when you tend to go to the smaller sizes, they're much easier to break, and it's easier when you're trying to grab that fragment that you can break the grasper. So I just right now have one big strong one that's the one I mainly use. A banana knife is quite a nice one to have to be able also to free the coronoid fragments from these attachments to the annular ligament or to the joint capsule. You can also use an osteotome to do that, or just to remove some, open up better the fissure so we can remove that part of the coronoid process where the fissure is, or to perform a mini coronoidectomy. We do use sometimes power burrs, but I don't use that much. Normally I don't need it. It adds a bit more cost, but I do use always the manual burr to try to burr and clean the joint as much as I can before getting out. Of course, we're going to need the cannula and the trocar to be able to introduce the scope and protect the scope and have the fluid going into the joint. But I think I find it very useful is the right angle probe to be able to probe the different structures inside the joint, to be able to move the coronoid process or the fragment in the coronoid process, or if it's an OCD, to manage that OCD also. This will be normally my setup. So with all the instruments in place, with the box, with the scope, we tend to have a bit of a basic set of instruments also, like with tabo clips, a needle holder, a couple of sutures, scissors, and then also we tend to use a couple of hemostats. And sometimes for the smaller size fragments, or even for bigger fragments that I don't want to break the graspers, you can also use sometimes the hemostats to be able to remove fragments. So you don't necessarily need a good pair of forceps, but it's going to make your life much easier to grab the fragment and take the fragment out. You're going to need a few set of needles and syringes, normally 18, 20 gauge needles, at least 1.5 to 2 inch needles. So I tend to use a bit of a longer ones to be able to introduce the camera, the instrument port, and to have a bit of an egress and egress if needed. And then I tend to have at least a 2 mil syringe to confirm that I'm in the joint, so to get fluid out and make sure I'm in the joint. And then around a 10 or a 20 mil syringe with sterile saline to flush into the joint and dilate the joint before taking the trocar into the elbow joint. Preparation and positioning of a patient. In this dog, for example, we're going to do bilateral elbow arthroscopy. Even if it's unilateral or bilateral, I always position the dogs in dorsal recumbency. If it was unilateral, you could do it in lateral recumbency, tying the other leg out of the way. But I'm used to putting the dog in dorsal recumbency, so I always do it in dorsal recumbency. And of course, when it's bilateral, it makes just life much easier. And then from the point of view of clipping, as you can see, I tend to do a pretty big clipping of the dog. And normally the clipping stops around mid antebrachium. If it was unilateral, I go 360 around the forelimb and probably up to the middle of the shoulder. When it's going to be bilateral, I also clip the space of the chest between the two forelimbs, and that way it just makes draping a bit easier and use less drapes to drape the patient. But it is true that you could potentially clip a bit less. And some people, especially when it's unilateral, you can only clip the medial aspect of the joint or the elbow, and that would be enough. But I just feel more comfortable clipping 360 and having the whole forelimb out in the field. Probably what it is, the most important thing to be able to get good access into the joint and be able to introduce as safely as possible, causing the less iatrogenic damage into the joint, would be to use a good fulcrum to be able to open up the medial compartment quite well. What I tend to use is basically sandbags. So normally the most dogs would be two big sandbags, and I want to check before draping, of course, that when I bring the forelimb downwards, that I'm going to have a good fulcrum to be able to open up that joint. So this is basically how I position and how I prepare my patients for bilateral or unilateral elbow arthroscopy, and using the sandbags to open up the medial compartment. There are things that you can buy. There's multiple things you can buy out there in the market. Like, for example, this case taking out from the Tobias book, which has the cushion, and then you can directly put the leg into position, but with this device, and that way you don't need an assistant to help you with holding up the leg. So you could do it basically with one single person. You need a simple surgeon. You see, in this case, much less clipping, and not even the 360, just the medial aspect of that elbow joint, which is also a possibility to do. So this basically head is over here. And basically, this will be my dog prepared for bilateral elbow arthroscopy with both limbs out in the field, so that way we can manage better, we can do pronation and supination if we have to. And then by clipping the middle of the chest or the space between the two forelimbs, it just makes life easier to be able to do both elbows at the same time without having to redrape. For the point of view of collection of fluid from the egress needle, I just tend to use some recollecting bags that we don't see them very well, but there's one here, one on the other side. They just sticks to the drapes. There's a bag that we don't see hanging from one side of the table, and that's where we collect the fluid from the egress. But of course, there are a lot of other devices that you can use using a suction device if you have it or if you wanted to get it. The position of the trolley, ideally you want to have it in front of you. So this is not the best position. I use this more when I'm doing bilateral. If I'm doing unilateral, I really want to have the whole trolley in front of me, so I'm looking straight at the trolley more than in an oblique position. But when you're doing bilateral, as you're going to have to move then the trolley from one place to the other, I have it more or less kind of in an oblique, not completely in front of my table, but a bit to the side of the table, so I can move a bit easier that trolley with a bit less time consuming. But ideally, as I said, especially if I'm doing unilateral, for sure that trolley will be basically in front of me. And you can see here I've got my assistant holding the leg and putting a bit of fulcrum, so putting the leg a bit downwards, so opens up a bit the medial compartment, so I can have a bit more working space and work a bit better. And that's achieved thanks to that fulcrum created by, in this case, two big sandbags where the leg is resting on and being cranked open in a way. So now we're going to go directly, we're going to introduce the camera into the joint. So here I've done a bit of drawings. So here, as you can see, we've got the ulna with the olecranon. We'll have the humeral condyle. The most important thing is to localize where the medial epicondyle. This drawing may not be very exact, but this point here is exactly where that medial epicondyle is, and that is what I want to feel, where the medial epicondyle is. The medial epicondyle will be here, so I want to palpate this. There are not any major structures, or they are major structures, the median and ulnar nerve, as well as the median artery, but it's very rare. I've never seen any kind of neurological damage because I've damaged the median or the ulnar nerve, but it's something that we have to be aware that is more or less in the area where we are going to be sticking needles, blades, and trocars. So as we said, what we're going to do is put our finger over the medial epicondyle. More or less, I'm going to go, what I tend to do roughly is go 1 centimeter distal to the medial epicondyle, 1 centimeter caudal to that medial epicondyle, and that's pretty much where I'm going to introduce the needle. So roughly, I would say 1 centimeter proximal of the medial epicondyle, distal from the medial epicondyle, 1 centimeter caudal. And that's more or less where you get the articular space to stick your needle in. I'm going to check that I'm in by just getting a 2 mL syringe and absorbing some of that fluid. That if you think that you need to send it to cytology or for culture, you can do it. If there's no need, normally I don't send it unless I think there's signs of septic arthritis. Then I'm going to get a 10 ml syringe full of saline, and I'm going to push it all in, or not necessarily all of it, but as much as I can feel a bit of pressure, so I know I'm just bulging that intra-articular space. Then I know that my needle's in the joint, so I'm going to get a 11 blade, and I'm just going to follow the same direction as my needle to go down into the joint. Ideally, you don't need to go full thickness all the way down into the joint, but if you go all the way in and you get a bit of backflash of saline because you're intraarticular with the blade, it's not a problem. Some people will say that you should not go all the way in to decrease the risk of leakage subcutaneously of fluid, but it's very rare to see that, and I haven't got an issue to go all the way down with the 11 blade into the joint. Once I've done my incision with my 11 blade, then I'm going to get my cannula with the trocar, and then again, following the same direction as the needle, I'm just going to go down into the joint. And at this time is when I really want my assistant to open a bit more the joint to try to decrease any damage of cartilage as I go in into the joint. If you could put, and could please put the first video. So this will be a video of placing the scope. So we feel the medial epicondyle, 1 centimeter in distal and caudal. We get the 2 mL syringe. We get some joint fluid coming out. We get a 10 mL syringe. We put a bit of fluid to just bulge a bit the joint and gain a bit more space into the joint. Again, I'm filling the medial epicondyle. Get my blade, stick it in. Fluid is not coming out, but sometimes it comes out. It's not a problem. Tiny bit of blood. We get my cannula. Again, following more or less the direction of my needle, I go in. And then I know that I'm in the joint because when I flush, saline is coming out. So because of that, I know that my cannula for sure is in the joint. If no saline came out, then I am not in the joint. Oops. Then once we're in the joint, so now then I'll stick my scope into the cannula and we're going to start looking a bit at the anatomy inside the joint. So we want to do a thorough exploration of the elbow joint or whatever joint we are in. As we've been saying, very important to maintain an adequate medial joint opening to basically create space, and we achieve that by having a good fulcrum so we can open up that joint. That way we're going to be able to manipulate the scope much better as well as our instruments and cause much less minimal cartilage damage. Then once I'm in the joint, what I tend to do, the first thing I normally do is go and look for the anconeal process. That way I know where I am, so I don't get lost inside the joint. So I stick my camera in, I'm going to go and look for the anconeal process. Then after that, I'm going to start going downwards, more distally and cranial through the trochlear notch. And I'm always trying to keep the trochlear notch in the middle of my image. Once I come down here, I can try and look at the lateral coronoid process. If I can see it, I want to look at the radial head, see if there's any cartilage damage or any problem with the radial head. Then I'm going to assess the coronoid process to see if there's any disease there. And then finally, I'm going to be looking at the medial humeral condyle to make sure if there's any damage to the cartilage, kissing lesions, OCD, or any other disease going on in the humeral condyles. To do this, to move around the joint of the elbow, really we need to do two things. Is move the camera head. But one important thing also to get a good orientation is that the head of the camera, normally there's two, in the normal ones, there's two buttons on the, let's say, dorsal part of the head of the camera, and the dorsal head has always has to be looking in front or up or to the roof or basically in front of you, and you don't want this rotating a bit to one side or the other because that changes the image inside the elbow. And then to move yourself around the elbow or any joint, what you're going to do is use a tiny bit of movements of the head of the camera. But basically, what's going to give you all the view of the joint is going to be moving the light post. So as we said, the cameras or the arthroscopes are 30 degrees oblique. And then normally the cable is going to come up opposite to your viewings, to your what you view. So basically, if the light post is looking dorsal, you're going to be seeing proximal, you're going to be seeing distal. If you move your light post distal, then you're going to be looking proximally. And this is the movement of the cable is what's going to give you the good look in the joint and just small movements of the camera head to be able to assess the rest of the joint. Video 2, please. This is not the best one. I couldn't find one that could see all the anatomy, but basically here now I'm in the anconeal process. So let me just stop this for a second. Just going to start it one more time. So we are here, we are in the anconial process. We're coming down, this is the trochlear notch, keeping it always more or less, trying to keep it in the middle of our view, roughly. Then we're going to go and see the radial head over here. We can see the medial humeral condyle over here, which has lack of cartilage. And then we're going to come down and have a good look at all that coronoid process, at the medial coronoid process. Okay, so that's how we more or less try to have a good look at the whole joint. Again, here we go with a radial head. We can do a bit of pronation and supination to make sure that that's a radial head. We've got a tiny fragment here, and you can see complete loss of cartilage in this joint. And it's important never to forget to have a good look up here at the humeral condyle. And that way we had a good look inside the joint. Thank you. Basically, once we're inside the joint, then the next thing that we want to do is put our instruments into the joint. So we got the cameras, we got the medial P condyle, I would say around a centimeter distal, a centimeter chorus, so a camera will be situated around here. We haven't talked about the needle for the egress point. So I normally don't tend to use this. So normally the needle, haven't got an arrow either. There we go. Let's get the arrow again. Okay, sorry about that. We're having a bit of, there we go. Thank you very much. So, where were we? So we've got the scope into the joint. We need an egress point. Normally, everywhere that you're going to read, they say that the egress point, you're going to put it over the anconial process. So basically, you palpate the olecranon, you go, more or less what the anconial process is, a couple of millimeters distal to that anconial process, and you stick your needle in. I tend not to use it. I just use the same needle initially that I used to put my cannula in. That's the one as I leave it as an egress. So I don't use this one as an egress, but of course you can put it perfectly well. And then the next step is going to be basically do your instrument pores. It depends a bit where the disease is. I normally, probably it's around 1 to 2 centimeters cranial to your arthroscope where you're going to introduce your instrument ports. The nice thing what you do, I initially start with a needle, so I just introduce a needle, identify my needle, make sure with my needle that I am in the place that I want to be working, and that's then when I start putting my instrument port. And remember that the space is a bit circular, so you have to have in mind the disposition of the roundness of that humeral condyle to know where you need to put that instrument port. Next video, please. So here, basically, we're in the joint already. We've placed the needle. We're happy that the needle is in the correct place. So here, then after that, we're going to introduce the 11 blade. Sometimes you see the 11 blade going in and just falling the same direction as the needle. Sometimes you may not see that 11 blade, but that's fine. You, as long as you follow your needle, you know you are in. And then the 11 blade is going to make a bit of a bigger space. If you wanted, you could also an instrument cannula also. I don't tend to use instrument cannula. I just use the same hole without an instrument cannula. And here what we've done now is after doing the hole with the 11 blade, I've introduced that right angle forceps. We move back out a bit the needle, and now I can use my the right angle forceps and right angle probe to have a good feel, a good look, and see a bit what's going on there. How hard is the bone? If there's a fragment, to start moving it, and I just have a good feel at all the surface and see what's going on there. Okay, thank you very much. Next video, please. And just, I would say, the importance of the first thing that you introduce is one is to make sure that you are in the correct place that where you want to work. So here we got again humeral condyle over here, coronary process here. There is a fragment there with a bit of synovial tissue. So this is left elbow, so my needle is coming from this direction over here. So I introduce my needle. I'm happy that the needle is in the correct place, so I'm gonna be able to work. properly. And then at the same time, I can sometimes use my needle a bit to start moving the fragment and see how movable that fragment is. But the most important thing is to make sure that your instrument port is in the correct size inside and that you can work properly with the camera. So you want to have some triangulation to be able to have a correct working space to make your life much easier. Next video, please. And then this next video is just to show the use. So here we've done already removed that. So this is the look we've done. So here we've removed part of the coronoid process. So we're looking, this is coronoid process, and we're looking at the space that we left in this case after doing a mini coronoidectomy. But here really what I want to show is the use of the burr. And when we talk a bit more about coronoid disease, as you already know, it's a kind of a very weak kind of bone in that coronoid process because of all the micro fractures that have been going on. And for me, the important thing is that we need to remove all that abnormal bone. And I use a lot of the burr, especially the manual burr, to be able to remove that. And what I tend to describe it, it's a bit like kind of a cheesy kind of bone. So it's very easy to just remove that bone. And I'm going to burr away all that weak, very easily breakable bone until I'm sure I get a nice hard bone. So here you can see that with the burr, you can very easily that we have a bit. It just, and this is the manual, so it's not even a power burr. Just with the force of my fingers, I'm able to just remove all that burr. So I want to remove and clean all the abnormal, weak, microfracture kind of bone to be sure that I get hard bone. Also, sometimes you find with a bone here that's very hard, this to just make it a tiny bit clean, you can also do is introduce an osteotome, for example, and just clean things a tiny bit more. In this case, probably you didn't need it, or you got the manual burr, it would be easier to burr that. But this piece of bone here was a bit harder. It doesn't look very nice because it's not like there's not like a nice straight line going down. So I'm just going to get a bit of the osteotome and just clean a tiny bit that other piece of bone out of there. That probably wouldn't make any big difference, but just to have everything as clean as possible and make sure that I'm removing all that weaker kind of abnormal bone. Right. Back to presentation, please. I can't move the slides again. Oh, fantastic. So that's more or less how we're going to work inside the elbow joint. So now we're going to be looking at the indications of different parts of what indication where we can use elbow arthroscopy to help us out. So in the case of an ununited anconeal process, right? So to be able to look at the anconeal process. So the anconeal is going to be around here. To have a good look, what we're going to use is basically, again, the light post. So the light post, we're going to go a kind of a bit of cranial distal position. So that way the camera is looking more proximally. And then moving a tiny bit the camera head, also a bit caudally, and that will give us a nice view of the anconeal process. So this part here is the anconeal process, and then over here we have the humeral condyle. Okay, so sorry about that, we've just been a bit of technical errors, but we are back. So as we said, we're looking again at the ununited anconeal process. So could we please put the next video? So here we got, so here we're looking at the anconeal process. We can see a bit the fissure of the anconeal process. Now we're going to stick a needle. And what we're going to do with that needle, just see if that anconeal process is fixed or if it's mobile. So we can get, and there we go. So now we're getting that, we're moving that needle a tiny bit, and you can start seeing that the tip of the anconeal process is mobile. So that is not fused together. That we knew that, but sometimes they can be a bit more fused than others. We're not going to get into treatment-wise what will be the next thing to do with anconeal process. That would be a different subject. But basically, if it was fixed in place and it did not move, then potentially you can just say, okay, as it's fixed, but we can just do a proximal una osteotomy to release a bit the pressures there, and hopefully that will continue to fuse. And if it's mobile, then you can decide maybe if it's too small a fragment, remove the fragment, or you could put a lag screw plus minus performing the proximal una osteotomy to try to make that and corneal process fuse. Another disease that we could use elbow arthroscopy is for incomplete ossification of the humeral condyle. To look at the area of the humeral condyle, what we want, we're going to do in this case is bring the light post a bit more distally, move it, play a tiny bit with the camera ahead, and that way that will permit us to have a reasonably good look at this area of the humerus, where we normally we're going to find the fissure in the, of the incomplete ossification of that humeral condyle. Next video, please. So here you can pretty much see that fissure between the two condyles that indicates that it's got an incomplete ossification of the humeral condyle. I mean, normally you would not do arthroscopy just to diagnose. Normally a CT, X-ray is normally good enough, or a CT, you can know that one's going to diagnose an incomplete ossification of the humeral condyle. Remember that it may not be full thickness going all the way down to the joint, so if you did it through arthroscopy to diagnose it, you may not diagnose it because it may not be a full thickness all the way down in the fissure in the condyles. But the thing why we normally do, next video please, why we normally do elbow arthroscopy with this patient sometimes is when we've done CT and we have seen that not only he's got an incomplete ossification of the humeral condyle, but there's also a fragmented corneal process that they can have more than one disease. So again, corneal process over here, we got the fissure in the humeral condyle, so we got an incomplete ossification of the humeral condyle in a Springer, English Springer Spaniel. We're going to come down the joint very shortly. Again, trying always to keep the trochlear notch more or less in the middle of the screen. Here we're going a bit more to the humeral condyle because what we're looking at is at the fissure in the humeral condyle. We're going to continue going down. And then here we're going to see that he also had a fragment of the medial coronary process. Here you see the view is not great, and that is because my camera is not looking towards the wall. It's a bit oblique, and that I haven't got a very good view. So now as soon as I turn the camera how it should be, we can find ourselves in a better position. So it's important also have the camera always, or the camera head always in the same position. But here we can see the fragment, and now when I put the camera where it should be looking, with the head looking dorsal, let's see. Oh, this is coronary process over here. That we got the humeral condyles, and then here we got that fragmented coronary process. And this is how really we should be using our camera head to be able to look at the images properly, better than as I was leaving it before, which was much a bit more oblique. But there, okay, we were trying to look at that fissure in the humeral condyle, which is a pretty nice video. But as we've always said, no, the main reason why we're going to be performing elbow arthroscopy is basically for treatment of elbow dysplasia or medial coronoid disease. To look at the coronoid process, in this case now we're going to move our camera post or light post from being distal, we're going to move it all the way cranial and proximal, to have the post proximally, and that way we're going to have a good view with our lens to distally, to basically what that coronary process is. And then we're going to have to move the camera head a bit also coronally, as you can see here, to direct the light post to the area of that coronary process. So treatment options for coronary disease. Again, there's going to be a talk in a few months about management of coronary disease. It's not the aim of this talk, but one of the treatments of elbow dysplasia is going to be the arthroscopy, and that's normally as first line staging of deciding what we're going to do next. We need to do arthroscopy. That way we can assess the joint, we can remove the fragments. As I said before, remove all that weak and abnormal bone. We can do some abrasion if we wanted to try to get a bit of bleeding to hopefully try to bring some cartilage back. And we can even perform a mini or subtotal coronoidectomy to try to improve the clinical signs of the pain on these dogs. And of course, as you already know, there are many other treatment options for elbow dysplasia, like conservative treatment, and everything else. Between the most important thing as we're talking with a thoracoscopy is going to be to remove that fragment. You can do it also with a thoracotomy, but the benefits of using a thoracoscopy to remove the fragment compared to a thoracotomy is that we're going to be able to diagnose much better the stage of that elbow. So we're going to be able to see the fragment much better, see there's more than one fragment, we can see better the fissure, we can also assess the quality of that cartilage. And so we got a much better visualization of the intraarticular structures and the pathology compared to a thoracotomy. Arthroscopy is going to be more accurate, removal of all the osteochondral fragments compared with the thoracotomy, we can leave something behind. Arthroscopy is going to limit the iatrogenic damage to the joint compared to arthrotomy, and it's going to cause less morbidity. So the ideal scenario is that we should be using arthroscopy and not performing an arthrotomy to open up the joint. There is a classification. So there's seven types of diseases or changes in the coronary process, depending on the fragments that we can find in the elbow. This was taken from Tobias and Johnson. There's also a grading system for the damage to the articular cartilage, which is the same thing. You can find this in Tobias and Johnson or in the arthroscopy book of Bill and Holtz. And it's good to have an idea of the classification just to describe a bit better the lesions in the joint. This is just an image to show the typical kissing lesion and potentially wide form. So here we got the coronary process, a fragment, and this is the medial humeral condyle, and you can see how a kissing lesion forms in these scenarios in which we got this fragment just rubbing away the cartilage in that medial humeral condyle. So just a nice image to show most likely why those kissing lesions form, or one of the possible explanations. For the focal management of medial coronary disease, so as I said before, my first line of treatment for coronary disease is going to be arthroscopy with views to remove the free fragment. And then you can or not debride and remove all that abnormal bone. In my view, it is worthwhile not only removing the fragment, but also going in with a burr, being manual or empower burr, or a bit with an osteotome, and just removing all that weak and abnormal bone. As we know from histomorphometry tests, that there is a lot of diseased subchondral bone left behind if we do not remove the fragment. So that probably is causing pain and discomfort to the dog, and potentially there's a risk that we could get more fragments becoming loose in the future if we don't clean all that out. But having said that, at this moment, there's no good clinical studies that clearly demonstrate that more aggressive arthroplasty is going to give a better outcome by being less aggressive. But I tend not to be overly aggressive, but I just want to remove all that abnormal, weak, cheesy kind of bone. So, one of the pathologies that we can see in the coronary process is a fissure. The image, I do apologize, the image is not great, but this would be a CT cut of the elbow with a radial head. Here we got the ulna with the coronary process, and here there is a fissure in that coronary process. Next video, please. Again, anconeal process over here, humeral condyle over there. We come down the trochlear nerve, keeping it more or less in the middle of our image. Radial head over here. And then here you can see that fissure in that coronoid process. We'll stick a needle, we'll probe it, and then or using burrs or osteotomes, we're going to just remove that fragment. Next video, please. Unfortunately, I didn't have a video of performing the procedure of removing it, but I do have a video of once I had removed everything. So again, radial head over here, humeral anconeal process, while going up to the anconeal process, humeral condyles, and then here we get, and here we've removed radial head there, and we're going to be looking down into the hole we've left after we removed all that big fragment of the apex of that coronary process where that fissure was. So we just want to make sure that we remove all that fissure, all that pathological abnormal bone. And we've done that. Then the typical disease that we're going to be looking at in the elbow is going to be these dogs. That, of course, there's already a lot of secondary osteoarthritis going on in these elbows, but in this case we got two tiny fragments in that coronoid process. Next video, please. So in this case, again, anconeal process, humerocondyle, we go down there, and here we see the fragment. So here you can see the cartilage is still, there's a bit of swelling, so a bit of chondromalacia, tiny bit of fibrillation of the cartilage inside the joint, a bit of the synovium, and here we got that fragment there. And it's always nice, if you're not sure what you're looking at, to just do a bit of pronation or supination of that leg to see the radial head moving there, and that way you know what is fragment, what is radial head, and have a better idea. So in this case, for example, the cartilage is not too bad, so we still have some degree of cartilage, and as I said, with a bit of swelling or what we call chondromalacia and a tiny bit of fibrillation of the cartilage, but there's still good cartilage. Next patient, in this case, as you can see, again, a lot of osteophyte formation over there, a very abnormal in radial head annulna, and then here we got a very large fragment in the tip of that coronoid process. Next video, please. So we're coming down again. This is coronoid process over here. Radial head there at the back, and here we have very big, and you can see there is divided into two different fragments. So here we're going to use a needle to, again, to make sure we are in the correct place so we can access with our instruments easily to manage that. In this case, you see there's a lot of loss of cartilage already in that coronoid process, as well as there was in the humeral head. And we can use as well, we can see there's a very large fragment divided in two, and there you can see the lesion in that medial humeral condyle, complete loss over there, and pretty much almost loss of cartilage also in that area over there. Next video, please. So it's a bit of a longer video. So now we've introduced our big graspers, nice big strong graspers, so we don't break them, and we're just gonna, ideally, if you can, what I have to divide this video in two, but ideally what you want to can is to try to remove everything one single bite if you can. That's not always the case. Yeah, next video, please. So we've taken the grasper, remove some of it. What can happen sometimes also, and you have to be very careful with this, sometimes the fragment can go a bit into the cranial compartment, or even worse, if the fragment moved and went into the lateral compartment of the elbow, then that could be quite difficult to remove. So here, when I got the first bite from the other side, the fragment has moved a tiny bit. Come over here, arrow has gone a tiny bit cranial. So what I'm trying to do, with the right angle force, and now with the banana knife, I'm just trying to move it to try to bring it a bit back to us. So because I don't want that moving. Also with the banana knife, I can try to remove a bit the adhesions that is going to be with the annular ligament or the joint capsule. But at the same time, it's not a bad idea to leave a bit of attachment of that fragment to the joint so it won't move too far away. Because if that fragment or a piece of fragment went to the lateral compartment, then that could make your life much more tricky. So here with the banana blade, I'm trying to bring this fragment just closer to me. So I can then now get my graspers again and get a nice big graspers that are quite strong to be able to just grab hold of that fragment. And if we can try to remove it in one go, or you may need two or three bites to be able to remove, but if you can get it all in one go, you decrease the risk of leaving any fragments behind. You could use a power burr to just burr the heck out of it. That's a possibility. But then I'm a bit worried that I could leave, something could go somewhere else. So I just tend to use the graspers to try to get at it as much as possible. But as there's a tiny bit of attachments to those fragments, it's quite good that once you bite into that fragment, you do kind of like the crocodile twist. So you just grab it well. And then once you nicely grab, just twist it a lot to try to remove those adhesions or those attachments to the joint to be able to bring that fragment out. So there we go. Still a tiny bit. We removed a lot of it, but we still got a tiny bit more of that fragment there. Introduce the graspers again. And we're just going to remove what we got left of that fragment. And then, of course, I don't show it here because it's a lot of video. But then, of course, once you remove the fragment, you're going to go back in with your right angle forceps, check everything, make sure that you're happy with everything. And then with a manual bore, I'm just going to go in again and just burr and clean everything a tiny bit more. So next video, please. So this is the same case. So number 14 is still the same case. We remove the fragment. We've cleaned everything out, and then I would say we can use the burr to try to clean everything out. In this case, what I'm doing is, you can see even with the burr, it is very hard bone. So here, potentially, you could do a mini coronoidectomy to remove some of that bone, or what I'm trying to do here is just a bit of abrasion. So I just get the burr, I stop the fluid, and then I just get the burr to create a tiny bit of damage to that bone, and to get a bit of bleeding. Then you see once they start the fluid again, the blood goes away. So supposedly with that, you can get some fibrocartilage growing back. And if it does, it won't be the same quality, but it's still potentially worthwhile doing a bit of that to hope that some cartilage potentially could grow back. Another case that we got here, the same thing, another CT, again with the radius, the ulna, and a very large fragment in that left elbow. Next video, please. So again, we've got here trochlear notch, humeral condyle, ulna, radial head, and in this case, we had one, and a second one, a two big, and a very large fragment, and you can see there, the loss of cartilage because of the kissing lesion in that medial humeral condyle. And then we can see the big fragment there. Next video, please. And then we got the fragment here. Again, with a banana knife, we're just going to free it a bit, move it a bit, or you can use the right angle probe to move things a tiny bit. So here we're moving it. And then when we have this a tiny bit more mobile, but still with a bit of attachment, we're going to introduce our graspers. In this case, the camera, you can see that has a bit of a crack. So the camera was a tiny bit broken. We can see the crack there. So we just introduce our forceps. Get a nice big grip if we can. Twist it around. And then try to bring it out, hopefully in one piece if possible. Twist it, see if it could all come out in one single piece. And then you need to fight a tiny bit with it. Almost there, so lots of twisting until we have it. I'm pulling and twisting to see if that's going to come out. And now I'm just trying to make it's a big one, so I'm trying to make my incision a bit bigger from the outside. Normally it's a small incision to put one suture. In this case, I'm trying to make it a tiny bit bigger because it's a big fragment to hope that I can bring it all out in one single go. And that way there's less risk of leaving anything behind. Then I would say very important when the fragment is out, we're going to stick our probe, we're going to stick our burr, just make sure there's nothing else, check everything. If there's any small fragment, we can remove the fragments. If there's a bit of flap of cartilage, we can remove a bit of cartilage with the banana blade. So here I'm just checking, make sure that we're happy with everything. Anything else, just go back in, remove a bit more. And then, of course, before we close the joint, we're going to give it a good flush to just flush all the small particles and all the inflammatory cells out of that joint. Here we're just testing a bit with the probe to see how things feels. Here we got the radial head over there. And then at the end we're just going to get the burr again and then just clean a bit all that area to make it look quite nice and just make sure that we're removing all the abnormal bone. And we've done that. So outcome. Having elbow dysplasia, in a way, what I tell the owners, that is not good news. No matter what you're going to be doing, these dogs, as you can see from the CTs and your experience, they already have osteoarthritis, and they're quite and loss of cartilage, and they're quite bad, quite badly damaged joints. So the recovery following removal of the fragmented coronoprolepsin is very variable. So normally, depending on the studies, there's many different studies, of course, normally it's around 85% of patients, they will have some degree of improvement in the gait, some of them better, some of them worse, but they will, most of them will improve their clinical signs. And there will be decreased degree of joint pain also, so they will be more comfortable and moving around better. So by just doing keyhole surgery, we can assess. So the idea of arthroscopy is, with keyhole surgery, which is the less invasive procedure of all the ones we can have, is to assess well the joint, remove the fragment, clean everything out, whatever we need to clean, and then just assess things. There's a lot of different studies, but there's this meta-analysis study comparing arthroscopic treatment to medial arthrotomy and medical management, and it has been shown that arthroscopy gives better results than medical management and that performing medial arthrotomy. And we said, I'm not going to be discussing all the other potential treatments of coronoid disease, we're just looking at elbow arthroscopy. But unfortunately, no matter what we do with that elbow, there is going to be progression of osteoarthritis. So always, from my point of view, the prognosis of dogs with elbow dysplasia is always going to have to be guarded because of that progression of osteoarthritis. Another technique that we can do for the management of medial coronoid disease is going to be a coronoidectomy. You can do it open or you can do it through arthroscopy. And as we've known before, there is going to be subchondral micro damage in the bone of that medial coronoid process. So we want to remove, again, I was saying several times, remove all that weak micro damage kind of bone. So you could go directly for a mini or subtotal coronoidectomy. There's one paper in which the immediate term there was sound in 82% of the cases, 84% did not need non-steroidals, but osteoarthritis progressed, so they did get worse later on in time. And because there is more to it, as we all know, more than just that fragment in that coronoid process. The indications for performing a coronoidectomy, normally if you have a very large fragment involving the medial portion of that coronoid process, I tend to do mini coronoidectomies in the cases in which some of them, they may be clinically very lame, and that when I go in, and we know with CT there may be no fragments or very small fragment, but you go in, there's no cartilage, complete eburnation or grade 5-6 of the outer bridge classification. And then in those cases, normally what I tend to perform a mini coronoidectomy to try to remove the contact of bone against bone of the humerus and the medial coronoid process. And you can use also a coronoidectomy if there is radio ulna incongruency to remove that contact between the coronoid process and the humeral head. When you're doing a mini or coronoidectomy, more or less this is the CT image, again radio head, the ulna with the coronoid process, an entesophyte over there. And we're going to try to remove a chunk of that coronoid process. Ideally, the description was basically going from medial caudal, going in a craniolateral direction. I just tend to more or less try to remove as much as possible of that abnormal coronoid medial, or the apex of that medial coronoid process. A bit something in those lines over there to remove that articular space that is damaged. Next video, please. So in this case, we got, again, coronoid process here, humeral condyle over here, and we complete loss, or complete grade 4-5 of cartilage damage. So here we introduce our normally a 5 millimeter osteotome, so a tiny osteotome, into the joint guided through arthroscopy. I'm moving the radial head. We always need to know where that radial head is. We don't want to damage anything that we're going to do into the joint. We do not want to damage the cartilage or the radial head itself. So once I'm happy that the blade is positioned or the osteotome is positioned in the correct position, from the outside I'm going to have a colleague banging with a mallet, banging the osteotome, you can see there, but I'm always looking to make sure that we're going in the correct position. Here we're cutting and we're being careful. We cut a bit, we're going to check with the radial head that we're going well. We're just going to continue cutting, again checking where that radial head is, so we don't cut too much and we cause a fracture in the ulna, or we cut into that radial head, damaging that radial head. Here again we're cutting, banging along to that bone. But normally if the bone is very weak, then I would just use the manual burr. And here the same thing in this case, if you got a power burr, for example, you could be using a power burr to just burr all that area that you're not happy with. Or if not, you can use, if you haven't got a power burr, then you can use the mallet and the osteotome. Here again we're checking the receive, pronation, supination, to see where that radial head is. And we're just going to continue with our osteotome until we're happy we get to it. Especially we have to be careful when we're getting close to that radial head. We're almost there. There we go. So now we're going to stop. We're checking the radial head again. Okay, it's a bit more. Tiny bit of blood. And then we're gonna, it's a bit slow this one, but then we have it, we test it, we move it a bit, we're gonna separate it, and then we're gonna get a big graspers and try to remove it all in one piece. And sometimes it may be better when they're big pieces to remove it with a hemostat, so you don't damage the big graspers. And sometimes with a hemostat it may come out a bit easier. So I try the graspers first. If that doesn't work, then we go with a hemostat. Okay, it's coming undone, and there we have the fragment of the mini coronoidectomy done with arthroscopy. Okay, next video, please. Okay, we'll start again with a video. So basically here, it's a different case. We've done the coronoidectomy there already. With a osteotome, we're just moving it a bit, making it loose. So now it's completely loose from the ulna, but there may still be some soft tissue attachments to the apex of that tip of the coronoid process. We're going to introduce a graspers. Grab it. Do the alligator twist a bit so we can get it out of the way. Take it out. There's the deep, you see, we remove a pretty big chunk of it. We remove, there's a big hole down there where that tip of the coronoid process was. And then again, we'll do the same thing. We'll stick the probe, have a good feel. We may have to do a bit of manual burr if we think, just to see, feel how things are. Remember always to give a good flash to the joint, or a couple of minutes, just make sure we flash all the debris that we could have left behind, so we just get rid of everything. And to come out, you can put a bit of local anesthetic, but there's been a few studies now showing that initially, some years ago, I always put bupivacaine into the joint. Now it has been shown that it could potentially cause a bit of damage to the cartilage. You could put morphine preservative free as part of your pain relief point of view, or you could do some local, or if you've got anesthetists, they can do a bit of local nerve blocks if need be, but this is quite keyhole surgery, so normally you don't need to do anything too special from the analgesia point of view. And then normally to suture, and then just to close your wounds, you've got potentially two tiny holes that you just need to put one suture on each hole, or just leave it open to close on its own. But normally I just tend to put one single suture, so they go to their vets in 10 to 14 days to just remove the sutures and make sure that everyone is happy how the progression is. So looking a bit at a study that was published in 2014, in which was a retrospective study for short-term, looking at the complication rate in a very big number of cases, so 750 elective elbow arthroscopies. So in this study, they showed that major complications, was basically second surgeries. It was around 5%. Looking at minor perioperative complications, around 17%. There was some degree of minor perioperative complication in which 5 of them needed to be converted. And then looking at postoperative complications, most of them were minor, around 10%. And 5% had worsening of lameness after the surgery. Severe pain in around 3%. Severe swelling around 2%. Normally, the swelling is just extravasation of the fluid, and it's just a crystalloid. So normally, I try to, if some cases I get a lot of fluid outside of the joint, I just try to press it down to remove the fluid. And if there's a bit of fluid, it, as we say, it's just crystalloid, and that normally will just reabsorb in the next couple of days. Infection, 0.2%, which is very little. And then remember, where those nerves were traveling, the median and the ulna, normally the risk of damaging one of those nerves, again, is less than 0.2%, which is a very low risk of causing any important damage with arthroscopy. 204 dogs came back for re-examination, and 7% of these dogs had severe or more severe lameness than at the time of presentation. So sometimes, suppose we could make things worse. Maybe we haven't. There are studies, we're looking at that to do a study in which basically we see that there's something, we don't remove all the fragment we think we have removed. So you repeat the CT after surgery, you may see that you may have left some fragment behind. So you have to be quite keen on ideally removing the fragment in one single bite to try to decrease the risk of leaving fragments, and just making sure that you remove all the fragments, that you do a good job. And that was very important, having the CT that will complement very well, knowing what you're going to find. So ideally, all these cases, before going in with an elbow arthroscopy, you do want to have a CT, because that gives you a better chance of making sure that you do a good job and you take care, or you try to improve the quality of life as much as we can with this surgical technique. So that's the end of this study. Just some of the pictures that I've taken of the drawings are taken from BedSurg, from Tobias and Johnson, and also from the Beal and Schultz and Holtz and White BM small animal arthroscopy, that if you're wanting to do arthroscopy, this small animal arthroscopy book is very good. So I hope you all enjoyed that talk. If you have any questions, you're more welcome to ask me, or you can always email CPD Solutions or email me, and I'll be happy to help you out with any questions. Okay. Well, if that is it, well, thank you very much, and hope to see you soon. Thank you very much. Bye.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Benito for a great presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.